Welcome to Boiling Point, the podcast to motivate ever-evolving entrepreneurs and forward-thinking movement pioneers. Our hosts, filmmaker Greg Hemmings and executive coach Dave Vail, are turning up the heat in the world's business communities. Our interviews with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers are raising the temperature of inspiration. Live from the hottest studio in this quadrant of the universe, here are Dave and Greg.
Okay, we're back. Greg Hemmings, nice to see you. You're looking fine, and you look
like you
got some sun. And I'm guessing it wasn't because you were outside in September, October timeframe in Atlantic Canada.
Exactly.
You look like you were in Haiti.
I was. I definitely was in Haiti. I just got back two mornings ago, Dave. Haiti was amazing. It was the thing. We were there doing a quick film on a reforestation project led by a group of really amazing women.
Oh, cool.
Who have this little nursery. Haiti has 2% of their forests left.
Yeah.
So it's really important work. Going there, my most exciting thing is all my stereotypes were blown out of the water, because I had this image of destruction and crumble and everything else that the media showed us shortly after the earthquake.
Right. And your pictures were just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the people there are beautiful, and everybody's got modern cars. You wouldn't know that there was such a tragedy in most of the areas that you travel there right mm-hmm. now, because it's mm-hmm. quite a few years later. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so my assumptions were blown out of the water. Now, the one thing that is awful is, yes, you see a ton of nice cars, good restaurants, shops, all the stuff, but there's trash everywhere.
And I hear a Segway coming.
And there's definitely a Segway coming. And when the torrential rains come every night, and this is it's a mountain country, massive mountains, and there's 10 million people that live on the side of this mountain. When the rain comes, the garbage just comes right down. So what makes me have a question is, with the billions of aid money that went back in to rebuild Haiti, and there's nice cars and nice looking buildings, and they still haven't figured out their trash problem, what went wrong? You know, really, money did not go into the right places, as far as I can see being there. Definitely a still massive gap between the rich and the poor. What's a segue, you ask? Well, we're talking about garbage or refuse of sorts. And today, Dave, we're very excited to segue into our next guest, who is, drum roll,
Brian
from 1-800
Got Junk.
How's that for a commercial, Brian?
That was perfect.
Was it? It was a little, I mean, I don't know about perfect, but we're working on it.
We always want to do a segue.
Yes, we're trying our hardest. But
it was good. I wasn't sure if you were looking for the drum roll from me. I was getting all ready.
Well, why don't you do a drum roll and introduce yourself, because you've got a very interesting story we want to dig into. And if you're at all familiar with the podcast, we don't want to screw up the introduction, so we actually encourage our guests to introduce themselves, because it's a lot more fun that way. So drum roll to you, my friend Brian.
All right, I'll do my best.
Nice.
Best one yet. All right.
A quick one. Yeah, so I'm Brian Scudamore, founder and CEO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and also O2E Brands, which is our parent company for the four great home service businesses we have, where we're making ordinary services exceptional. So, Greg and Dave, thanks for having me on the show. And it's pretty cool to hear about your trip to Haiti. Sounds amazing, but sounds like there's also some pretty interesting challenges they still need to fix there.
Challenges that could very well be incredible opportunities, my entrepreneurial friend.
Absolutely. I've never made a trip to Haiti yet, but I'll certainly have to put it on the bucket
on your list.
But
now, you've got an interesting background. And it sounds, I'm guessing, on the kind of quick scan of information that was sent across to us. But I mean, actually, I can tell you I'm familiar with your brand, the 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I'm very familiar with it. So that to me starts becoming interesting. But the backstory is quite interesting. And I understand, I mean, this is something, and I'm, you know, that you started when you're 18, and you're probably a little older than that now. Why don't you take us through, you know, kind of how, well, I guess what how would you like to describe kind of where your business is now and how it started? Like, why don't you take us through that journey?
Yeah, where we are currently, maybe I'll paint a quick picture there, and I'll take you back how it all started. But today we're $250 million in revenue, getting close to the $300 million mark. And, you know, we've got 2,000 trucks across Canada and the United States with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And then we've got our other brands all under the O2E brand banner that stands for Ordinary to Exceptional. So our newest brand, Shack Shine, we are challenging now not just junk removal, but the home detailing business. Very fragmented mom and pop industry where we're creating franchise ownership or partnerships for people to get into where they can wash windows, clean gutters, power wash, all that sort of stuff. We're creating a brand in that very fragmented space. So I think our business is all about brands. It's all about exceptional customer experience. And where it started was, yeah, I'm not 18 anymore. I'm 46. Still feel young at heart, but 27 years of building these brands, it all started when I was in a McDonald's drive-thru trying to figure out a way to pay for college. I was one course short of graduating from high school. My parents were not impressed, to say the least. And I talked my way into university, and then I said, okay, I've got to find a way to pay for university. And there I was, McDonald's drive-thru, beat up old truck in front of me, filled with junk. I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy a truck of my own. $700, a real rusty old beat up pickup. And then I started hauling junk and a self-financed business that's grown into well over $250 million.
How did you know? Like, well, I mean, and that, by the way, I mean, that's phenomenal when you know, you're describing kind of the revenue. It's incredible that it would have, you know, kind of started in a McDonald's, you know, drive-through. So you get it, you buy an old beat up pickup truck, you start hauling, you know, to pay for tuition for college. How did you know this is something that could scale the way it has? Or what told you that, or what was the first hint of that?
Yeah, every trip I would take, I'd go on a road trip down to Seattle with friends, or my family was from San Francisco. I'd do trips down there, and I always kept seeing beat up old pickup trucks filled with junk in every city I went to. And I said to myself, this isn't just a Vancouver problem where people need someone to haul away their old furniture, recycle the recyclables, donate the donatables, all this stuff that when you renovate a home or spring clean. And I said, this is a problem that exists everywhere. And every local newspaper I would look into, or, you know, today, Craigslist, there were all these guys hauling junk away. And it was Bob's Junk, Frank's Junk. There was no real brand in the space. So I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create the FedEx of junk removal, have clean, shiny trucks, friendly, uniform drivers, and really clean up a dirty industry. And when I saw three years into my university education, I felt I was learning so much more about business, running a business, more than I was studying in textbooks. And I dropped out.
Oh, I love that story, man. There's two really cool things that popped out here for me. One, the brilliance of naming your business the phone number. Like, okay, let's just start there for a second. Where did that idea come from? Because it's such an obviously huge, awesome winner of an idea. But yeah, where did that idea come first? And then I've got a follow-up.
So my first truck, I went and got a phone number, and I thought, okay, I might as well at least get something that's memorable. And I came up with the phone number 738-JUNK, emblazoned on the side of the truck. People would see the truck, and they'd pick up the phone and call. And then I realized as we expanded into the United States and even other cities in Canada, the opportunity was to have one phone number. It made sense to have a toll-free number that could be the same number across North America and even in Australia where we operate today. So we came up with 1-800-GOT-JUNK, but the cool part of the story that I love is the phone number wasn't available. And I was just determined to get this phone number. I found the guy that had 1-888-GOT-JUNK was willing to sell it, but he wanted $100,000. That wasn't going to happen. So I made phone call after phone call. I finally tracked down the owners, and it was the Department of Transportation in Idaho. So the government owned the number. And the guy in the phone room, I talked to him, and Michael was his name. He said, you know, this phone number sounds like it's way more important to you than it is to us. You can have it.
Come on.
He faxed over the forms, gave me the number. 2 days later, when I called to thank him, he was no longer there in the company. So I have no idea what transpired there, but we got the number. got it for free, and it's been such a key
part
of—
Wow, you got to find this guy. This is amazing.
There's a documentary here, Greg.
Do you know what? Yes, let's parking lot that, Brian. If you and I ever do work together, let's make it sure it's the documentary film of you trying to find Rob or whatever.
Michael.
Michael, I don't know the last name. Never met the guy, but there's a lot of Michaels in the world.
Is that ever cool? My quick follow-up to that one was, years ago, I was in Vancouver, and I remember hearing you on an interview, if I recall, talking about this simple concept of putting uniforms on your workers and having nice logoed cars. Again, a very obvious play, but certainly nobody in your industry was doing that at the time.
Obvious now, maybe, but not at the time, clearly.
Yeah, I think service is so incredibly important, and you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. Why not show up in a collared, clean blue shirt? We have truck team members that are out there with 1-800-GOT-JUNK where clearly they're going to get dirty from job to job. It's not uncommon that our truck team members will carry a couple of extra shirts with them just so that they can change to maintain that not just friendly uniform driver look, but clean, friendly uniform driver look. And it matters. One of my favorite brands in the world is Starbucks. I love coffee, maybe a little too much. And when I go into a coffee shop and it's a Starbucks, it's so consistent, the service, the uniforms, the friendliness, the atmosphere. And that's what we aspired to do. And I think we've done.
There's a couple things that, I mean, my brain's going, well, actually, maybe the first question would be, I just love to hear the business model. Like, so is this, you know, so is this a franchise? Is this, you know, is this something that's corporately run? What is the model?
Yeah, it's a franchise. So all of our O2E brands are franchises. So Shack Shine, Wow One Day Painting, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, you name it. What we do is we provide a business model, a platform, where some young, hungry, entrepreneurially minded person might feel stuck, not having an idea, doesn't know where to start with a business, can become a franchise partner with us and we build something much bigger together. So the model is we license them the know-how, the training, the systems, the support, the 24/7 call center, and we get out there and we give someone a business where they can make money from day one. They don't have to come up with the idea. We've done that. We've built the brand. And then if I look at any one of our businesses, it's home service, because if you find the right people, you teach them how to find the right people in their vehicles and their employees. It just scales. It's finding happy, smiley people who can do what they say they will do and deliver on their service promises.
I've got a really important question. Believe it or not, I actually was a franchise owner of another company quite some time ago. And I say believe it or not because anybody listening to me would be like, what? Really? And it's a discussion for another podcast. So impressed with how corporate really controlled the brand. And every time we get together on an annual basis, it was inspiring, really, to see, you know, how they've been able to maintain the values and the vision of the founders and of corporate without any deviation. Love to hear how you've been able to keep the 1-800-GOT-JUNK brand consistent, values intact, and has there been any bumps in the way, you know, as you built out a franchise model?
Yeah, a million bumps, and you learn from those bumps. We have a culture we call a WTF culture, which stands for willing to fail. We're willing to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. So bumps are inevitable. But how have we preserved the core brand? I think what we've done is a lot of storytelling, and we've really taught and discussed with our people that this is our brand. This is up to all of us to preserve the brand, keep the values. So our values, it stands for PIPE, passion, integrity, professionalism, and empathy. And we hire people based on those values. We fire people who don't have the values or who compromise their values. So it's preserving two things. One, the people. And second of all, the brand, and making sure that the look and the feel is always, always consistent.
What do you... what does it take at the end of the day to have like a WTF philosophy, you know, like an outside of just you, but just a company built around that?
It's letting people know that we mean it, that you really can fail and you're not going to lose your job. It's learning from mistakes. It's taking some risks. We are an entrepreneurial culture, and that means sometimes taking some risks. Now, we like people to plan. We like people to brainstorm and think through what they're about to do, but don't be afraid to get it wrong, to screw it up. We had one of our franchise partners in 1-800-GOT-JUNK who took a risk. He said, I am going to be open till midnight. I am going to put on our radio ads across the city of Baltimore that we are open till midnight. And people thought it was crazy. In fact, you know, he was questioning whether or not it really made sense. It became something that we adopted in our radio across North America. We have an $8 million radio budget. Every single one of those ads would advertise that open till midnight philosophy. We're not really coming to pick up junk very often at midnight, but it gives that impression that we're professional, we're open, we're there to serve you anytime that works for you. And so you take some risks, you make some mistakes, and along the way, some things work out, and you replicate those.
And is it, you know, like, and by the way, I mean, you're speaking to two entrepreneurs, so we can appreciate, you know, the willingness to fail. And it's hard, it's tricky, and I'm just loving that, you know, and, you know, I guess maybe it's trying to find examples of where people do fail. And they, you know, they recognize that it's okay, and it's how we learn versus being, I'm not gonna say punished, but you know what I mean. But really, you know, like there's an easy way to actually beat that out of people as well.
Yeah, we'll have someone that's working on a project, and they'll set a deadline, and in the end, it seems like it was completely unrealistic. You sit down and you don't grill someone and say, you know, you idiot for coming up with a deadline that was way too aggressive. You ask them, what did you learn?
Right.
What would you do differently next time? And that's such a key question. Anytime a mistake is made, okay, what did we learn?
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say the learning is part of growth. My biggest failures had to happen. When I fired in 1994, my entire company of 11 people, 5 years into the business, that was a massive failure on my part, a massive leadership lesson for me, learning that I had the wrong people and I had to get them out and start again. But thank goodness I learned that lesson only 5 years in and not 27 years in.
Well, that's huge. I almost want, I know, Dave, you got another question, but I'd love to hear more about that too.
Well, and what I was going to say, I was just going to comment on, so Brian, we have a coaching company, and to me, you're describing a culture that's very conducive to what we would call, you know, in our world, you know, call coaching, right? And you know, and it's really supporting learning. But just the questions that you just posed after someone doesn't hit a deadline, as an example, or whatever it may be, or the questions we pose to ourselves when we fail to deliver or fall through or whatever may happen, is actually, unfortunately, kind of novel. And when I say unfortunately, because I think a lot of times people are more prone, or you know, maybe the easier thing to do is sometimes is to beat up on someone, or to feel like you can really nail them down on this, or to ourselves. So where did that come from in you, or how did you come up? Was this just something ingrained in you, or is this something you learned along the way in terms of, you know, kind of asking those good questions about when we don't hit something, you know, how do we pose questions where we learn from it and make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think back to just my own personality is I've realized as a leader that you can lead people and have people follow you if you've got empathy and understanding for their mistakes. And rather than see them as screw-ups, if you can help coach them, as you said, and help work with them and say, what did you learn? That's just such a constructive way to move forward, to make progress. And I've realized through my own life the number of mistakes I've made that I wouldn't change any one of them. People often say, if you could rewind the clock, rewind your life, what's one thing you would do differently? Nothing. I literally wouldn't change a thing because they were all lessons I needed to learn to get us to where we are today. So I think it's giving people confidence that I talked to a guy yesterday on the phone. He was a fellow entrepreneur in Vancouver who reached out to me, who's in a dark, dark place with his business, and he's struggling. And I said, remember that what you're going through right now if you can keep the right mindset, as tough as it is, and you're not getting sleep, there will be a point where you look back on this, and if you take the learning and apply it, that you'll go, thank goodness this happened. Thank goodness that you had that failure and that learning to get you to a much better place. It's tough to see at the time, but sometimes we need those little reminders as our northern, you know, our guiding northern star.
To what degree, I couldn't agree with you more. And you know, and you know, he will thank you in spades, I'm sure, in the near future. Or maybe he already has, because I know when someone's come along in my life at times when things seem pretty dark, I mean, it's sure nice to hear, you know, that kind of reminder. You mentioned, I read it in your bio here, that you that part of your success comes from the fact that you have ADHD. And you know what, I actually have a close a business partner that has ADHD, and he would describe it the same way. And we have a number of people we've interviewed on this podcast that would describe what some would deem as, you know, kind of insurmountable, as actually really core to who they are and how they've succeeded. Love to hear a little bit about that, you know, in terms of how that you know that relates to your success.
Yeah, school didn't work for me. I went to 14 schools from kindergarten through to college. I only graduated from kindergarten. I never did high school and college. You know, I dropped out of both. So, you know, looking back, I think, what did I learn from the fact that I couldn't sit still in class and I couldn't focus and that the school system just didn't work for me? Well, I started to realize I love to learn. I love asking questions. I love meeting new people. I love searching the internet and getting ideas. My learning format just wasn't the same as most people, where they could sit still and sit in school. I needed to work on my own schedule, on my own clock. And so what I learned is, get rid of distractions. Anything that got in my way, just eliminate it. Just push it to the side and get hyper, hyper focused. So I think people with ADD have an innate ability to be able to laser focus, but sometimes it takes a little extra work to get to that point, and eliminating distractions. So when I come up with my to-do list of things I've got to do on a given day, it's never 5 things. It's never 15 things. It's 3 at most. I say, what are the most important things? The 3 most important things. Sometimes it's just 1 thing to keep me extra focused. And that keeps me even more productive.
It's really cool, Brian, because our last guest, right before we last week's guest, one of them was a fellow named Sean Smith, and his company is called DontDissMyAbility.com. And he speaks exactly the same truth as you do in the fact that, you know what, the school system did not work for him. And he didn't realize that until he was an adult. He thought there was something wrong with him, because everybody told him there's something wrong with him his whole life. And then once he realized that it's the system wasn't working for what his needs were, everything started to switch around. And now he's consulting and coaching and really helping people, with labels, succeed. So it's really kind of cool that's a theme on our podcast, too, that we've been hearing a lot from entrepreneurs, which is really
cool. I was told so much by so often by so many teachers, you know, you'll never amount to anything. You're the class clown. You're a goofball. School isn't going to work for you. And it does wear on you. But then when you can realize how to shift your perspective and go, okay, hold on, ADHD, I understand what it is now. It's a gift. It is a gift for me. I would not medicate it for the world. It's something that allows me to think differently, see the world differently. And I believe that it's made a huge difference in my life. So everybody's got problems. How do you see them as gifts, and how do you use them to your advantage?
Is there something, man, there's so much here. Right? Like I just, we try to keep our podcast to 20, 25 minutes, and there's just so much here. And we've mentioned this to a few guests, and I'm really hopeful that you'd agree to possibly doing a version, you know, 2 at some point. Yeah, when you're scheduled.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because this is just great stuff. And I guess we're kind of in part of our conclusion. But what? Because I'm thinking, you know, so many people the challenges they have, whatever, you know, maybe it's a label or whatever, or a challenge learning or whatever it may be, or economic circumstances, whatever, you know, it's really, I think it takes exceptional people to be able to see it as a gift. And I'm just wondering, like, what, you know, helped you see it as a gift, and maybe quiet the voices out there that you know were sharing, you know, telling you that you'll never mount anything, like, because that's a pretty, you know that's a pretty hard thing to do.
Yeah, I think inspiration from others. My children just did the Terry Fox run at school this week, so you know that's someone top of mind is Terry Fox. Yeah. I remember growing up as a kid, and yeah. I mean, what an inspirational guy who took his challenges in life and just said, hey, I'm going to make the best of this. I am going to make a difference in this world because of the cards I've been dealt. Or Rick Hansen, you know, mm-hmm. the amount of research and money that guy has raised, mm-hmm. and I've been fortunate enough to meet him. I mean, what an inspirational person. Mm-hmm. Someone could look at Terry Fox or Rick Hansen and say, wow, that's so sad. Well, no, they are taking what cards have been dealt and they've turned it into a gift and made it a part of their cause and their mission in life. And, you know, it's just finding, you know, what's the whole, when you're given lemons, make lemonade. I mean, life is lemonade. Everybody's got struggles and we often don't talk about them all, but it's how do you share with others the tough times you've had and how you've changed your perspective to inspire others.
Well, thank you for being an inspiration to us and to many. I'm, you know, that'll be listening to this, and obviously, and it was in fact, someone who does PR for you that reached out to us, and I'm just so happy that she did.
Fantastic!
To connect, and because this is exactly the stories that we love sharing with our audience, and actually we both love hearing as well, because it, you know, kind of shines a little light at us, and it, you know, kind of it's always learning for us as well. Is there, in terms of people learning more about you, your story, your organization, you know, what's the best way to do that?
Best place to go, our central hub of information about any of our brands is O2E Brands. That's letter O, number two, letter E, brands.com. And our thought leadership, some articles we contribute to in Forbes, the Wall Street Journal, everything's there. And happy to share and help people in any way. It's pretty easy to connect with us. LinkedIn, it's all on the site.
That's awesome. And Brian, a humble request from us would be, if you know anybody who would want to share their story on The Boiling Point, please do encourage them to get in touch, because our little initiative has really spun into something really interesting. Dave and I decided to do this a couple of years ago on a weekly basis, just so we can learn more ourselves by talking to people like you. So our selfish agenda is we're learning a ton every week, and we love meeting new people from around the world. So if you know of anybody that would like to share their story, please let them know about The Boiling Point.
I will do that, and don't hesitate to email me if you've got someone that you know in Vancouver that you think would make a great story. It is a small city. I'm happy to try and connect you as well. So
wonderful.
I'll throw it back to you guys as
wonderful,
well.
Brian. Yeah. Well, listen, thanks so much for sharing your story. Really appreciate it. And looking forward to seeing the franchise open in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince. I think there's a great opportunity.
There you go.
Thanks,
well, you guys made the show fun and easy, so thank you very much, and have a great day.
All right.
Likewise. Thanks. Take care, Brian.
Bye-bye.
What a humble guy, eh? I mean, incredible. Yeah. I had a sense of the success of his business, but don't you just love it when someone jumps on? It's just so real. And, you know, and he kind of, you know, in part of asking him to describe his business, talks about it being $250 million in annual revenue.
I love that word. It's like, you could say 300 million or something, but when you say $250 million,
you go, bam.
Yeah.
But what was more exciting about it for me personally about it, I mean, obviously success is fabulous, but it is, his authenticity and, willing to share his story and just kind of getting back to the grassroots where it started, how it started. I mean, that is really powerful. And just being this whole idea of, embracing, you know, like Sean has shared in previous podcasts around embracing this, you know, what's thrown at you in life, whether that's innate to who you are or it's the circumstances you're born into or come across, but be able to leverage that and actually, I mean, that's hard to argue with.
100%. And I think the real tactical business takeaway is just the obvious parts about customer service and happening to have nice, cleanly dressed, you know, people picking up your garbage and your junk, and having nice looking trucks, and having a name that everybody will remember the phone number of. Like, it sounds really innovative, but it's really obvious stuff. And so many people have mimicked what he has done, you know? And I think that's something we can all think about within our businesses.
100%.
Yeah.
And having a philosophy of WTF.
That's right. Which actually stands for
willingness to fail.
Willingness to fail. Nothing else. Nothing scandalous.
Exactly, because we don't want an explicit warning on this.
Yeah, because Gene Fowler destroyed that on our last episode, and we had to put the E.
Actually, it wasn't the last one. It was the one before.
Oh, it was two before.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thanks, Dave.
Good seeing you, man.
Yeah.
Well, let me know. So you're going to now be the proud owner of a franchise in Haiti. I can't wait to hear more about it.
It's
going to
be great.
Over and out.
See ya.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Boiling Point. Remember to rate and subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Boiling Point Pod. To see more from Dave Vail, check out leadershipunleashed.ca or visioncoachinginc.com and on Twitter at Dave_Vail. And to catch up with Greg, visit hemmingshouse.com and at Greg Hemmings on Twitter. Thanks for listening and remember, keep that pot boiling.
Looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.